Breakfast puppies?
We're all set to begin, so let's dive right in to Bikers, Dice, and Bars. Talking bicycles and motorbikes, gamer things and all the like. You can listen to it in your cars, but mostly it's about dive bars. Bikers, Dice, and Bars.
Hey, Jacob, what are we drinking tonight?
Tonight, we're drinking an all-American classic, Jack Daniel's Old Number 7, mellowed, matured, tasted, and awarded. The finest drink in dive bars everywhere.
I actually used to work for Jack Daniel's way back in the day. No, I worked for the company that owned Jack Daniel's. I actually worked for the luggage subsidiary. But we got a lot of...
Foreman?
Yeah, Hartman.
Oh,
yeah, but we got a lot.
Foreman owns them now.
Well, I don't know who. I don't know. I was 19 at the time, yeah. And I got booze for Christmas. But we're following this drink with a classic brought by Xander.
Yeah, so, you know, Jacob went OG, and I decided I had to go OG, too, with Old German.
Oh, yeah.
That's been a hot minute.
Old German is probably my favorite of the local PBR substitutes at the Portland bars.
It's the most common, I think, that you can find that are really, really good.
I need to say thank you, Xander, because to be honest, Jack Daniel's is the basis for a beautiful Boilermaker. And Old German is one of the finest things.
Oh, he's going for it.
To make yourself a Boilermaker that will make you regret life.
Would that be a Beerlermaker?
Oh.
No, that was bad. I'm sorry. You're listening to Biker Dice and Bars, recorded here in the wonderfully drunken city of Portland, Oregon, right up here in the beautiful Pacific Northwest. I'm Nathaniel, and I have with me two of my favorite local people, both nerds and bikers and drinkers. Say hello, guys.
Hello, guys.
Howdy.
I'm Jacob, just Jacob, 10-year Portland resident. Yeah, I'm a transplant like most of y'all. Don't lie. If you see a real Portlander, they're a myth.
Unicorn.
I'm a motorcyclist. I'm a bicyclist. I'm a drinker. I'm a gamer. And I'm a general raconteur and roustabout. Over to you, my friend.
Yeah, so I am Dr. Xander Gerrymander over here on this microphone over here. I have been in Portland for going on 15 years now, actually. I've been here a long time, been a long time gamer. I have been a long time drinker and a long time cyclist as well. I don't do motorcycling. I do a lot of bicycling. It is my primary mode of transportation around this city. I had a scooter for a while. I no longer have it, sadly, but I want to get another one at some point. And I am very excited to be a part of this endeavor with you fellows.
And as I mentioned, I'm Nathaniel. I've been in town here about the same length as you, Xander. We met roughly around when we moved here. You're one of the first people that I met in this town, strangely enough, also a transplant. And one of my favorite people. You are, I think, both going to be involved in my wedding in some form of capacity coming up this year.
I did agree to DJ your wedding.
This is going to be an interesting year, guys. So thanks for joining me here tonight. This is our first episode of this brand new venture that we've put together because we're, again, three nerds. We like bikes, we like games, and we like drinking. Figured, why not talk about these wonderful things together and also give a slight homage to a missing and hard to get cartoon from the 90s.
Oh, yes.
Anyway, I might cut that bit. I'm going to try this thing that you have made, Jacob.
Oh,
I'm
you're going to try. You will hate yourself, sir.
That's why I'm just doing a tiny little sip. Just a sip.
Boilermakers require commitment, sir.
This is fucking nasty.
Yes.
Oh, God. Why did... No. Oh, God.
I've made a huge mistake.
I've made a terrible mistake.
This is why I keep my boilers and my makers separate, and they can mix in my belly.
So, Nathaniel, as a person who does not understand the code of a Boilermaker.
I've never had a Boilermaker in my life. This is the closest thing I've ever, just now, and I hated it.
So, you have to understand there's the code of the Boilermaker. It goes back since the early days of cheap whiskey and even cheaper beer. See, drinking a Boilermaker with another person isn't sharing a drink. It's establishing a pact. A pact of criminality before the night is over. Something's got to be vandalized. A fight's got to break out. At least something that is misdemeanor level needs to occur, sir.
So what you're saying is we're not sharing just a drink. We're sharing a nightmare.
Exactly.
And pretty soon we'll be sharing a record.
I'm Jacob, just Jacob. I've been a motorcyclist, a full-time motorcyclist, since 2008. But I grew up with motorcycles. I grew up around motorcycles. I was born into a family of motorcyclists. My grandmother rode motorcycles. My mother rode motorcycles. I am a third-generation motorcyclist. And I have brought many people into the fold. I grew up around one percenters, tourers, dirt bikers, recreational riders, drag strippers, and competitors.
I did a lot of drag stripping.
I was just going to make that comment as in...
My background's a little different than that, but keep going.
Interestingly enough, one of the people who was drag stripping was doing both.
Now that's fabulous.
I believe in learning to work on your own bike. I believe in that riding is not a lifestyle. It's a way of life. And be free of the cage, people. Be free of the cage.
I am generally down with that lifestyle. I am not a year-long rider. I've only been riding a motorcycle for about 7 years now. I love it. I love everything about it. I also live in Portland, Oregon, and I learned to ride in Portland, Oregon. And one thing that I learned very early on is that black ice sucks ass. You hit a patch of black ice your first time, you don't even really know what's happening. So you hit this patch of black ice, and next thing you know, time hasn't passed. One moment, you're vertical, and the next, you're laying on one side of the street, your bike's on the other, you're like, now, how did that happen?
Oh, yeah.
And you're sore for days, and you realize, I don't ever want that to happen again. So I generally just don't ride in the black ice months around here. The problem with that is, you can never predict it. This past winter was boring and dry for the most part. It rained very little here. Whereas the winter before was just frozen over constantly.
Yeah, it was like hot. It was pretty icy all the time. Ruined a lot of the concerts I put on because either artists couldn't get there or people couldn't get to the venue. You know, and so it was just terrible. And like you said, this time around, Christmas Eve, I think we had a little bit of ice and I even rode my bike to work. I was like, nah, fuck it. Just going to do it.
It's and which bike bad. Are you talking about?
My bicycle.
That's fantastic. What kind of bicycle is it?
It's a giant two. I don't even know what it is. I had my last bike got half jacked, and so it was cheaper to buy a new one. I think the brand is Swift. Not entirely sure, but it was around the $400 range, which is where I like to buy my bicycle. So if it gets stolen, I don't feel so bad about it. Yeah. And so far, it's been doing me really good. It has these pretty awesome tires on it that are resistant to flats. And I will say, as someone who's tended to get flat tires about every 2 or 3 months, I've had this bike for about 5 or 6 months with no flat tires so far, and it holds air shockingly well. So I'm pretty stoked with the tires alone.
So, Nathaniel, what do you have under you these days?
It varies. Lately, what I've been riding more than anything else is also my bicycle. I have a 1972 Schwinn Continental. I bought this bike for $100 off the side. It was chained to a street sign on the corner of a southeast, very active southeast corner in Portland in the Buckman neighborhood where I was living. And it had a number.
That's where I live.
It had a number. It was like, hey, call this number if you want to buy this bike. And the guy had a house, a really big house. It was just this kooky old man, a few, just 5 buildings away from the street sign. So I went, I saw him, I was like, I stood next to it. I kind of moved to the side and sat on it to make sure it would fit. I said, yeah, I want this bike. Called him up, walked over, paid him $100 and bought this bike. It is heavy. But it is also really fun. It gets with me everywhere I want to go. It's super easy to work on and it's durable. I could probably beat someone to death with this bike.
Yes, heard.
So I've been riding this bike. However, when I choose not to ride my bicycle, I've been riding I got a Suzuki Boulevard, a 2012 touring model. I love it. It's actually difficult. I have this conundrum when I step out to my garage in the mornings. I'm going to get on two wheels today. I'm going to go to work. I step out. I look to the left. I see my bicycle. I look to the right. I see my motorcycle. Well, I know what I'm riding today. I should hide that.
And I am the proud owner of a 2011 Yamaha Striker. 1,300 cc's of fun in the sun, cool riding in the rain, and all around good time. It's a cruiser setup, an oddball. It actually looks like it should be one of Yamaha's Star line, but it actually is badged as a Yamaha. Odd bike there. For bicycles, I am the proud owner of a Velocity Maxpedition Pro. It's an Expedition high wheeler recumbent bicycle. Recumbent, you say? What sort of hipster crap is that? Well, I had a drunk driver give me a present a couple years back, and unlike my two comrades here, I cannot ride a regular bicycle anymore. So I am one of those people you see looking like the middle-aged guy I am, touring around Portland with my feet up in the air, doing leg presses up every hill in town.
CrossFit.
Whoop. You know, I actually just want to say, because up until I met you, Jacob, I thought that recumbent cyclists were just a bunch of assholes who wanted to be different. And I actually had no idea that it could have been for a medical reason or something like that. So I do want to say that this has been very enlightening to me, and I feel like an asshole for thinking that they were assholes all these years.
We'll talk about that at some point in the future.
Every recumbent cyclist I've known has done it for physical and medical reasons. Typically,
way,
it's
way
been trying different things, trying a different approach to continue doing a thing that you love. I know so many asshole motorcyclists who are really hard against people who ride either sidecar bikes or trikes. But to me,
sidecars are awesome.
First off, sidecars are awesome. I saw Indiana Jones in The Last Crusade. You saw Indiana Jones in The Last Crusade.
My grandmother rode a Harley Davidson with a sidecar. So,
but also the trikes. Trikes are cool. Trikes are just as cool. Sure, you can't lean. But you know what? If you've got some kind of medical problem and you can't do it, but you still want to ride?
Yeah.
Get on a trike. Get on a Ural. Get on anything but a Can-Am. Get on.
Hey, now.
One of my dreams has always been to get a motorcycle or a scooter with a sidecar, because when I do eventually get my dog, that dog is wearing some goggles and we're going to ride together.
My dream is to have a sidecar bike with an English bulldog with doggy goggles.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. But for me, it's a schnauzer, because I wanted to have a dog that I can also twirl up its mustache as well, so we can be twins. But I definitely want to go and get a sidecar with doggy goggles.
One of my favorite sidecar memories is the day I got to go out with my partner and take a test ride in a Ural. It was me, my partner, and our husky Namaji. Both of them were in the sidecar. I got photos of it. It's a beautiful thing when you have your dog in a sidecar.
It is. Some of my favorite moments have been downtown. You know, say what you will about it, there's a motorcycle bar, Kelly's Olympian. If you're downtown, it's a fun place to stop. Depending upon the night, the crowd may suck.
Yeah.
But they have motorcycle parking, dedicated motorcycle parking right in front of it.
Like 10 spots right in front.
Yeah.
Just motorcycles. It's awesome.
And every time I've been at night for a show or anything, at some point during the night, I'll step outside for a cigarette and somebody will park there with a sidecar with a big old, either, I can't remember if it's a German Shepherd or like a Golden Retriever, just hanging out. There's a big old shaggy dog. Or a big old, you know, long snout dog, not a bulldog, but like a big dog. Just what?
How you doing? My bike. My bike, my buddy's inside. So, guarding the bike.
So I want to have a moment to talk about the bikes we used to know. Xander, I'd like you to lead this one.
One of my favorite bikes of all time was the bike that I had when I was in Santa Barbara living there. It was kind of the first serious bike I had, because I always thought I want a mountain bike and mountain bikes are so cool. And then I finally got kind of more of a city bike, because I was a grown up at that point. And I was going to city college and I was biking to work as well, which, if you don't know Santa Barbara, I lived on the Mesa, and the Mesa is full of giant hills. So me and this bike did a lot together up hills that make the hills of Portland look pretty tame in comparison. It was a great workout all the time, up until the point in which I got hit by a truck with that bike, and that bike and me got dragged on around the road for a while before a bunch of cars started honking at said truck, and the guy backed off and let me out from underneath his giant vehicle. But that bike was the bike that I probably missed the most just because it was kind of my really formative bike growing up.
What about your motorcycle? Or sorry, my scooter. Your motorized bicycle.
Yeah, so I had a Buddy 50cc for a very long time. And
just in case anybody is listening has that issue, we are not in favor of any kind of bike shame. This is definitely a podcast where we're going to talk about two-wheeled vehicles of all types, maybe even some three-wheeled vehicles. No four-wheeled vehicles. Two-wheeled vehicles, I don't really care what kind you drive. If you are on the two wheels and you got a helmet out there and it's basically you, a little strip of metal, an engine, and the asphalt, as long as you got the rubber side down, we're friends. I'll wave at you.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that was actually a really interesting thing, too, because I didn't really understand the waving thing when I first got my scooter.
Because people don't wave at scooters because they're assholes.
Well, I mean, not true. Motorcyclists actually would in this city give me the wave, and I kept not understanding what the wave was about. It was my first motorized two-wheel vehicle, and I just really enjoyed riding it because it was really fun. The gas mileage was great. The wind through your face and all that kind of stuff was awesome. And then I would just be scooting along, and all of a sudden, a cyclist kind of gives me the whole little, you know, wave, and I would never wave back. And I finally asked a friend who had a motorcycle, and I asked, it's so weird. People keep waving at me like, oh, no, that's just the sign that they see you. We're together. It's in unity. And I went, I have been a complete dick for the last 4 months because I have not been waving back.
We could probably talk for a long time about the wave. I want to hear more about your scooter. What happened to it?
So I had that scooter for a while. Speaking of black ice, I took a good tumble on that once with black ice. And it was very much how you describe all of a sudden it's that time freeze and you're somewhere else. Your bike is 15 feet away.
You're like, how did this happen?
None of it makes sense to you.
Instantaneous.
Yeah. And so I had a scooter on that. So I had to get that repaired. I had a bad accident involving a TriMet bus in which the TriMet bus on a blind curve had leaked a bunch of fluids.
Ooh.
And of course, I didn't see that. So I, you know, went out really hard on that. But the honest to God truth about the demise of my scooter was that the way that scooter parking worked at my university was that, you know, you literally had to like tape your ticket to your thing and people would just take them off all the time.
What a bunch of assholes. Yeah.
And
did you take pictures?
I didn't have a camera. My phone didn't really have it. You know, this was back in what, like 2005? You know, I'd never had a good, this is the first good smartphone I've ever had in my life. So I hadn't have any good technology for a while. And it'd just be this thing where like, I would get a ticket and I'm like, well, I can't afford this ticket. And so it got impounded eventually just because, you know, people just kept taking off my parking things.
You lost your scooter because the city stole it?
Yes.
That's it?
Yeah.
That sucks, man. Yeah. Damn the man.
You know, and I even went to court and I just kept, and I told the judge, you know, I was very nice. I was very polite, well-dressed as I usually am. And I just said, look, I would pay for these things. Oftentimes it would be, you know, in coin because I had a lot of loose change. And so there was no credit card record for it. I couldn't prove that I had paid at these times. And, you know, people just strip them off and use them for themselves. And it was just this thing where, like, well, I just kind of feel like cyclists are screwed in this regard.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was just the quickest, easiest way to get from where I was living at Villa Gorilla, where you live for a period of time.
We shared bunks. Well, we didn't share bunks. but we shared a pad for a while.
Yeah, over at Villa Gorilla. And, you know, so it was way easier to take a scooter into school than it was to cycle because it was really steep hills going up and kind of dangerous hills as well on a bicycle going up into Hillsdale neighborhood to downtown Portland. So, and again, you know, when your scooter gets over 100 miles to the gallon, it's also super cheap to take it.
Yeah, that is one of the wonderful things. Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful things. Yeah. I usually, I think I get about 65 with mine. Anyway, that's
so damn
story.
Good, though.
Bikes you forgot. Bikes you have lost.
Bikes I have lost. Well, the bicycle that I lost was this bike. This primordial bike. Because...
like it crawled out of the ooze and founded what bikeness is?
Nay, sir. Nay, it did not crawl out of the ooze. I reached down to the ooze, pulled its components out of the ooze.
Ooh.
Its components did not belong to each other at all.
Oh, I love that.
And became the bike. The bike probably over its lifetime had components of roughly 60 some different bicycles over it. Because whenever something broke again, I'd hit the tip and grab new parts and components. So the bike, the Franken bike.
Did it have a name?
The Franken bike.
Okay.
Had at one time dirt bike handlebars. One time it had a standard flight deck for your classic 80s 10 speed. It just had whatever it needed to keep going. So Franken bike is the bike I definitely, definitely miss the most.
What happened to Franken bike?
Well,
well, Sonny,
'twas a dark and stormy night.
The storm's coming.
So when I lost Franken bike, it had two mismatched wheels. No, I don't mean they were different styles. I meant they were different sizes.
So like a penny farthing.
Exactly.
A slightly less exaggerated penny farthing.
Franken farthing. Yes! It's alive, Jeeves! It's alive, I say. There you go.
It had a 9-sprocket cassette on it, but its shifter could only handle 6. So I had to be very careful how I shifted under speed. It was 4 different colors. And the handlebars at the time had been manufactured out of loose plumbing supplies.
This bike is making... I got to settle my pants happy. Here.
Okay, yeah. Folks, we're going to be taking a pause while Nathaniel works some stuff out.
While he works his sprocket.
So, a short time later.
So Frankenbike was taped with a mixture of reflective tape and duct tape. Partially to hide the fact that its frame was actually cracked at the time.
Oh, poor Frankie.
And it was chained up outside my house.
I imagine as you're telling the story of Frankenbike that it's kind of like how in Pee-wee's Big Adventure, Pee-wee goes and locks up his bike where he just pulls out like 50 feet of chain and just wraps it all up continuously.
Given how many wheels I had lost off of Frankenbike, yes.
So how did this all go down?
So someone snuck into the yard, past my neighbor's window, my neighbor being a little old lady whose recreational activity was sitting in her window watching everybody in the neighborhood.
Taking notes.
Uh-huh.
What's he building in there?
What the hell is he building in there?
Critiquing my gardening. Cut not one, but 2 different locks off the bike and stole Frankenbike.
Let's raise a glass for Frankenbike.
To
Frankenbike.
Sorry, man. That's rough.
So that's my favorite bicycle. My favorite motorcycle. Most of my motorcycles have gotten names. That one was one of the few that actually didn't have a name.
A bike has no name.
A bike without a name. It was a gunmetal gray and silver Honda Shadow Spirit.
Okay, yeah.
It was 2008.
Oh, what? Wow. Okay. That's almost the exact same bike my buddy rides.
Yeah. It's a fantastic bike. It's easy to maintain.
Yep.
It's clean. It's
Honda run forever.
It's easy to ride. The only problem I ever had with it was the tank on the Honda Shadow Spirit is a fairly wide tank, and I just had to commit myself to having knee rub on my tank constantly.
Yeah, that knee rub.
Mm-hmm. But in the time I had that bike, I put just upwards of 50,000 miles on it, which for most motorcycles, not necessarily Hondas, but for most motorcycles, you're talking, you know, Methuselah levels of age on that. Unfortunately, that bike is no longer with us, other than a couple key components. But yeah, that was the one I was riding when the drunk driver hit me.
Ugh. Oh, let's raise a glass for the unnamed bike.
To the unnamed bike.
My bikes, I was just about to ask if you guys had named your bikes. Like, I'm actually really big into naming my bikes. I've named all of my bicycles, and I've named my motorcycles as well. My current motorcycle, the Suzuki, I named after the first girl I ever had a crush on in my life. Her name is Loretta.
It's a good name.
I'm not actually going to go into that story because somebody might know this person. So Yes, Loretta. My first motorcycle was named, I named her Mona after one of my first literary loves, the character of Mona Lisa from a William Gibson book, Mona Lisa Overdrive, the third of the Cyberpunk trilogy, and I attest the best and I will fight you. But Mona...
Choose your weapon, sir.
Mona was a fantastic bike. She was my first bike. My first motorcycle. She was 1982 Honda CM450 Custom. So the CM450 was specifically known for being the Honda-matic. This was the not automatic Honda-matic. This was the five-gear fucking... It was basically a Hawk model. It was a 1980s Honda. So it looked like all the other 1980s Hondas. I loved that bike. I sold that bike so I could have money to pay for my new bike. I miss that bike so much because that bike was so fun. I could just zip around the city in it. It had problems. She didn't have a kickstand because it got knocked off before I owned it. She didn't have any real frills.
Did she have upholstery, sir?
She had upholstery. She also had a nice Firefly class sticker stuck onto her engine block, which, I put there. I think Xander might have given that to me at some point.
That sounds like something I would do, considering the fact that you showed me that show.
I'm pretty sure you gave me those stickers, and I stuck one onto that motorcycle. And aww. I ended up selling her to a couple who wanted to, the guy wanted his wife or girlfriend or something to have a bike to ride on. And God bless them, they took that bike from my house in Northeast Portland. And then they bought it from me. And then they rode it all the way down to Wilsonville on the interstate. And I'm like, ooh. She's a new rider. You might not want... He's like, oh, got it. It's all good, Mira. It's all good. Like, okay, man. You're good. I miss that bike so much. She was wonderful. She took like 20 minutes to start up because you started her and then you had to let her warm up because she was old. But she never did me wrong. I dropped that bike like 5 times. Foot thingy.
The shifter.
The shifter was just gnarled and beat up from all of the many times I dropped that bike on my ride. And I would just take it, hammer it back out.
As one should.
I miss that bike so much. I miss you, Mona. Come back to me. And the only other bike I ever lost was a bicycle that I didn't give a shit about that got stolen by meth heads.
Yeah.
I think I owned it for like a week. It was a loner. It wasn't even a loner. I was like, I needed a bike to get around. Somebody gave me their piece of shit Walmart bike, and I got stolen from my back porch.
Well then, sir. To Mona.
Xander, do you ever name any of your bikes?
I do, and I have. So my current bike is the Green Monster. I've never owned a green bicycle before. And, I like to own most of the things I own. I like to have them black. It's the inner goth me that will never die.
I feel you. Yeah.
And, I was looking at bicycles. I just really needed to have one. And so I went to River City Outlet and I wasn't particularly, I wasn't really sold on a color because I just needed one to get around because I had my last bike half janked. And this one was actually the smoothest ride. It was the best ride. It was the best price. And it was a very dark forest green. So I thought that was very, Pacific Northwest of me. And having gone the last several years to Fenway Park, where they have the Green Monster.
Nice.
And, the first time I went was 2 years ago. And I also went last year as well to Fenway Park. And I thought, you know what? This is the Green Monster.
My current two bicycles. So I actually have another motorcycle, but I'll talk about that at some other time. My current two bicycles. I have two other bikes, and I purchased them.
Sorry, I did have a name for my other bike, too, if that was of interest.
Oh, yeah. What's your other? Sorry.
So my Buddy 50 I had, my cherished Buddy 50, that was my Red Rocket, inspired by the Fallout game series.
Oh, yes.
Because it was a zippy little guy. And I also went and... So when I bought that scooter, they told me that if you wanted to, at some point, because if it's under 50cc, you don't have to get a motorcycle license to ride it. If it's up 50cc, you have to. And then the dealer said, if at any point you want to go and take out your 50cc motor and put in basically an illicit like 66 instead,
let us know.
Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. And I totally did that. So it was super zippy.
So you had a Buddy 75, was it?
I think it was a 75, yeah, yeah. It's been a while. It was probably a 75, yeah. So it was not 100, it wasn't 50. They put in a 75 engine in there, and it zipped like nobody's business. And
are you telling me that the Dr. Xander Gerrymander has been riding around in a motorcycle without endorsement?
That is what I am saying, because I no longer have said scooter because the man took it from me. But yes, I did.
Well.
But I mean, like I said, it was a little red rocket. It was so fun. And especially once that 75 was in there, the kick was awesome. It just zipped around like nobody's business. And I enjoyed that bike, and I'll miss you.
That's why I miss Mona. She just zipped everywhere. Like, I had this tiny little 450 that kicked off faster than my buddy's Buell. And that made me feel good. Now, the Buell quickly overtook me, but I could launch off and do wheelies just without even thinking about it. Just from a stop, we're all lined up. I just take off, and I'm faster than the Buell. And he's like, you motherfucker. I think he got rid of the Buell.
You know, and I was actually inspired to buy a scooter from our mutual friend Lex.
I have a story about Lex and how I earned my motorcycle endorsement, which I'll come into another day.
Yes.
But my current two bikes, I actually have given them. I have two bicycles that I purchased last year on my partner's birthday for kind of his and hers bikes. And I got them from a bike shop here called WTF Bikes, really close to where we came, Jacob.
Yep.
And I bought these bikes because they were nice little neighborhood beaters. They were really adorable, really easy to work on. And I named them Vicky and Vance. Another Fallout reference.
That's a great casino.
Well, howdy, partner.
Do you need another Boilermaker, sir?
So we're back, and I think I've had like a little too many of these beer makers here, so I'm starting to slur, and we're going to talk about some geek stuff. We've been dropping Fallout references. We've been talking all kind of things here. And let's get off the road, and let's sit down on the couch and at our computers and at the gaming table here. So I am a gigantic gaming nerd. It's kind of my thing.
That's how we met.
That's how I met both of you. Both of absolutely. We have been gaming together in some ways. I don't know how long I've been gaming with you, Jacob, but I know I've been gaming with you longer than the game that I've been playing with you recently, which is apparently how we officially met. But I know we met before that. And Xander, we've been playing for like 15 years.
Yeah, yeah. It's been like 13, 14 years.
You were in one of the first games I played. So,
yeah.
I'm going to kick it off. Xander, I've known you the longest. Kick me off here. Let's talk about some games. So I know you're into tabletop games, but you're also a computer gamer.
Yes.
You've got a number of... You into board games either?
I do like board games. I like card games. I like basically any kind of thing that's a game I like. And I don't... There's not a lot of games that I have not liked per se. There's things I like more than others, you know, and that translates everything into board games. I also do like some sports as well because I can make, you know, game analogies to them, which make them fun. I like chess. I never really got into console gaming. That's the one thing I haven't really ever gotten into. I had an NES growing up, and that's about as far as I got.
Fine. I mean, there's nothing wrong with console gaming. I went back and forth and back and forth. I understand that there's a bunch of people online who think this you could only do one or the other, but fuck those.
Those people are stupid.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, for me personally, it was basically I could only afford one thing at a time, and a PC was just it did more of the things I wanted to do plus game. It was either I can buy a really fancy console or I can buy a fancy computer that also does so many of the things that I want to actually do.
Exactly.
And that just seemed like the more fiscally sound choice for me to do. So that's why I stuck with PCs.
Now, I met you on, I think it was LiveJournal, right?
Yes.
We met back in the day on the LiveJournal in a local community, and we're going to give a shout out to the damn Portlanders.
Hell yeah, damn Portlanders.
Community from LiveJournal that I think persists on Facebook.
It does. It's not the same.
It's not the same. But I met you. I was posting. I had just moved to Portland, and I was looking for people to play in a game. And this particular game was called Fading Suns.
I remember this game very well.
Excuse me for a moment, folks. I need a moment for myself.
So take Dune, take Alien, take Riddick, take a little more Dune, and then mix them all together, and you basically have Fading Suns. It's not the wagon train to the stars. It's more the camel convoy to the stars. Like, it's this beautiful fantasy or space fantasy gaming setting. And I was wanting to run a game for it. And you, I believe, were one of the first people online. Because the people that I was playing with, I had been playing with. You, Jacob, at least know one of them, Christina, who's in our other game. And but Xander, you were the first person online who was like, yes, I want in. I will do this thing for you.
Yeah, and actually one of my all-time favorite gaming memories is actually from this game, because I had done some tabletop in high school. Not a lot, but enough to make me know what I liked and didn't like in games. And I knew instantly how much I loved you as a GM. Like, from the get-go, because I'd had bad GMs where I just wanted to beat them over the head and say, your story is stupid, your puzzles make no sense, and everyone hates you. Whereas with you, I felt challenged. It was never, sometimes it was frustrating, but it was always fair. And
frustrating, but fair. I like that.
That's how you are. And I mean that in the most sincere way possible. But I also learned how much I hated metagaming. And one of the best instances of not metagaming was when we had landed on a space station somewhere, and I believe it was Drake and I who had gone and thought, well, the rest of the party went into the space station to go do something. We thought, oh, there's a better ship next to us. We're just going to go and hijack it. And we were really excited because our ship was kind of a jalopy.
Yep.
And this ship had an espresso maker that we were really excited about.
That's right. Space coffee.
And it had a really awesome, you know, like Gatling gun on top or something like that.
It was like a pulse cannon.
It was something like that. But it was really sweet. And we basically just took all of our stuff off the old ship, put it onto the new ship, while the rest of our party was going and invading the space station. And so as we were trying out the new weaponry and making sure we got all the navigation stuff in place, our party was hauling ass out towards our ship. We waved and said, by the way, this is our new ship. There was some crazy giant space monster chasing after them.
Yep.
And so we just went to work going, well, I guess we have this new cool pulse cannon inside an airlock space station. Let's go blast the hell out of this thing. And
there were repercussions, but I was like, okay, for it.
And so we ended up shattering the eardrums of our entire party.
Yep.
Drake and I gave ourselves a bunch of high fives.
There were many high fives.
Inside the spaceship.
Both literally and imaginative.
We thought that when they came in, they would give us high fives. They were bleeding out their ears instead. But we killed the monster and saved their lives. So I don't know what they were complaining about. But that was, you know, again, one of my fondest memories was that particular instance in that particular space station.
And you've always played interesting characters in my games. And we'll talk about some of them maybe a little bit down the line. But Jacob, now, I met you officially through this game that we're playing right now, which I'm playing with actually at least one of the people who was in that same Fading Suns game 15 years ago. However, I think I've known you longer.
Yes, you have, sir.
In the local gaming scene. We've run into each other at Guardian Games, Game Storm, local events.
Yep. The first time we became really cognizant of each other, because I'd seen you around a little bit before then, and for those of you who don't know the old NPC over here...
Which, by the way, are my initials. I was cursed.
No joke.
He's got sort of an affect, demeanor, and appearance that is rather, shall we say, singular. You'll recognize him a mile away after you've seen him once.
To be fair, he's actually changed appearance quite dramatically since I've met him.
This is true.
Likewise, Xander. Likewise. Xander, you were this like greasy-haired punk rock wannabe kid, and now you are the single most dapper person I've ever known in my life. Ever. Your mustache looks like it takes 2 hours. So you got it going on. Jacob, you were saying.
So anyways, Nathaniel here wrote a small treatise of a game called Moto Bushido. I did not know that this person I knew by appearance was named Nathaniel. All I know is that I found this game at a local convention called Moto Bushido. I flipped through it and went, there is a spark of genius behind this. Yes, Nathaniel, this is going to be a little bit of a love letter to you, but you know.
Oh, you guys.
It was just Valentine's Day.
that was yesterday. Okay. Well, you know, one day late.
And so I bought a copy, and I knew somewhere at the convention Nathaniel was. And I ran Nathaniel down, walked up to him, and went, man, this is great shit. You know about motorcycles, don't you? Will you sign this for me? And he looked at me like I came up to him and offered to sell him meth for a second. Whipped out a Sharpie and signed it. And after that, you and I just kind of kept bumping into each other.
To be fair, by that time, if it was a game storm where I was selling the game, and the only times that I've been selling that game, I've also been working the con,
mm-hmm.
I was probably exhausted at that time.
It was Friday afternoon, and it was the first game storm you sold Moto Bushido at.
Yeah, I was exhausted already.
So was I. I was running the con.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But yeah, so that was where I met you. As far as geek culture, gaming, that sort of thing, I have never been much of a console gamer. I grew up Poe, and consoles cost money.
Yep.
I was playing Apple IIe games in the 90s.
Oh, I did a lot of that, too. Did you play that old Risk game?
No.
Okay, so...
I know the one you're talking about.
The thing that always disturbed me about that game was that, because they didn't have colors, it was all black and white. And so it was various patterns that they had to indicate the countries that were playing, and two of them were swastikas, and it creeped me out.
Yes, I know.
Oh, I got you guys beat. Have you played the Ancient Order of War?
Yes.
No. The old handy game. It's basically the first ever real time strategy video game. It was amazing. So we'll talk about that on a future episode. Keep going, Jacob.
But
that was a deep cut there, buddy.
So, Jacob's experience with geekdom probably started... Ooh, this is kind of hard because my dad was a huge science fiction fan. And I was an early reader. And so I started reading sci-fi roughly about kindergarten. And so I cut my geek teeth there, but then a friend of mine, Robin, wherever you are, I miss you, bro. I know you don't live on the internet. He introduced me to Redbox Dungeons & Dragons. 6 years old, and I'm playing Dungeons & Dragons. That's how geek I started. I board game. I still role play. I don't computer game much just because I don't have a lot of free time, but I do appreciate it as an art form. And yeah, I help run local geek conventions. I'm very active in advancing the geek community to a more equitable venue nowadays. And yeah, my geekdom is kind of broad.
So my first ever science fiction, fantasy book, whatever. This is deep. I remember being a tween, maybe?
Was that even a term when you were that age?
I've got I have a bunch of memories and they clash. And I don't know which happened first.
LSD will do that.
One of those memories was buying the book Armor by John Stickley, which is the first ever fantasy sci-fi book I ever read. And I bought it because it had a guy in a spacesuit beating an ant to death with a rifle butt. I was like, this is the coolest thing I've ever seen in my life. And to date, nostalgia aside, it's also one of the best books I've ever written. It's also one of the best books I've ever read.
I'll second that.
Science fiction book. I think it tops Heinlein in Starship Troopers. It is an amazing sci-fi military and personally introspective epic.
As a small side note, from time to time, I teach classes on various subjects, and I use excerpts from the book Armor as examples of good creative use of post-traumatic stress disorder.
Exactly.
I actually didn't even think about bringing in my sci-fi love novel into, or love of sci-fi novels into this, because one of my greatest memories of all time was when I got to finally meet Ray Bradbury before he died, and he was at Westmont College giving a lecture. And what was so interesting about that is my favorite book of all time is still Fahrenheit 451. And he said that that was the only sci-fi book he ever wrote. He said everything else was based upon fantasy because it was not science-based. Whereas Fahrenheit 451, he felt actually could happen. It was based in some fiction, but also a lot of science in which he thought that's maybe where we were heading. So I love that about that.
Another memory was... And again, I can't figure out when these sync up. But the first fantasy novel that I ever read was a fucking Forgotten Realms licensed novel called Spellfire. And it was like, I can't even, it was bad. It was bad, but also good. And there were titties in it. So it was great. And I was a little kid, you know, whatever, titties. But the first game, the first role-playing game I ever played was, I have a fun story behind this. I had a Nintendo Entertainment System, and I had a subscription to Nintendo Power. The whole reason I had a subscription to Nintendo Power was because it came with Dragon Warrior if you bought it. If you got it at a certain time, you got a free copy of Dragon Warrior. And Dragon Warrior, a friend of mine had it, and I was like, I fucking want that thing. And I got it, and it was amazing. It was an amazing game. I beat the shit out of Dragon Warrior left and right. I actually obsessively, compulsively moved my dude over every single inch of that map. I did. Yep. That was just me, because, you know, I had all this time, and it was the most amazing thing I've ever seen in my life, and I'm staring at the screen, my jaw is literally hanging open, and I am drooling at how awesome this game was.
So I got into tabletop gaming much later than both of you did. I was, I believe, a freshman or sophomore in high school when I got into it, but I was not unfamiliar with the concept, just because of the fact that I had been doing a lot of computer gaming, which were basically all either RPGs or RTS. And so all of the concepts for me were already down there. You know, I knew about hit points, I knew about stats, I knew how to raise them, I knew how to do all this. And so it was just a matter of translating that from computer games into actual tabletop world. So just as a kind of a baseline of where I got into that.
So when I beat Dragon Warrior, I had waiting for me in my Nintendo Power subscription, they started sending out strategy guides with your subscription. They sent out like two or three a year or something. There was a series of them. And one of them, I think the first one that they sent out, was for this game called Final Fantasy. And wow. The cover of the strategy guide was done in red and black, my two favorite colors. And it had these, like, a wizard and a fucking warrior and some orbs. And it's like, this is the coolest thing I've ever seen in my fucking life. Dragon Warrior can eat a dick. Final Fantasy is the new thing. And I read this strategy guide. I had never played the game. I'd never heard of the game. I read the strategy guide from cover to cover and begged my mom to buy this game for me. And when it finally came out, because it wasn't even out yet, they sent a strategy guide for a game that wasn't out yet. When it came out, I bought it and I played the fuck out of that game. And I have this memory of playing this game and getting to the end. And then the boss killed me. Oof. The final boss of the game killed me in his second form. Chaos. And I was so depressed. All I ate for a day were Ritz crackers and Easy Cheese. And I wasn't even supposed to eat the Easy Cheese. And my mom was really pissed at me that I ate all the Easy Cheese.
You guys could afford Easy Cheese?
No, we couldn't. That's why she was pissed at me for eating all the Easy Cheese. And I grew up Poe in Alabama. So the next day... Because we were on summer break at this time. So the next day, I just spent all day getting back to that point. And when I beat the final boss, I jumped up, threw the controller down, and was just in my high-pitched, not even two digits old voice. And my mom thought I was dying. What's wrong? It's like, I killed Chaos. Her face was so, what?
The devil's in the boy. The devil is in the boy.
And so that is what I thought role-playing was like. And when a buddy of mine was like, let me get you to play this game. It's a role-playing game. You've played those before. I said, yeah, I've played those before. I'm cool.
Like five times a week.
We sat down to play. I was like, yeah, where are my hit points and my attack stat? He's like, no, it's not that kind of game. It's like, oh, I'm not cool. And my first game is Palladium. Palladium Fantasy First Edition, which I attest today is a completely playable game.
Yep.
You just have to know how to play it, and you have to be taught by somebody who was taught by somebody who was taught by somebody down the chain directly from Kevin himself.
Palladium is not a game. It is a virus.
It's a virus. Yeah. So anyway, one thing led to another, and I've been writing games since, and that's a long way of saying I'm a gigantic geek.
Oh, yeah.
And the first time, the Dragon Lord says, you've killed all my minions. Would you like to join me? I said, yes. And the screen turned red and nothing happened. And I realized that the game had fucked me. So then I had to go all the way to the Dragon Lord's lair again in Dragon Warrior 1. And then I killed that guy because fuck him. And that is each of us opening up our second can of old German premium lager. The world knows no finer from the Pittsburgh Brewing Company. So guys, we've been sitting here for like an hour or something. I've lost track at the time. I don't care anymore.
It's more than an hour. Are you ready for your next boiler?
Time has lost track of you.
I've lost track of the time here. We've been drinking Jack Daniels followed by old German. What do you guys think of this so far? Just the drink in general. How does this work out for you?
I have never been a fan of Jack Daniels. It is one of those...
How dare you? No, that's fine.
I will proudly say I'm more on Team Old Crow over Jack Daniels because Old Crow is the whiskey that won the Civil War.
I'm more of a Tullamore Dew guy, but...
Well, again, I will say that on my birthday, when we went to Gil's Speakeasy... And you asked them for their finest whiskey, and they said, well, I have Jim Beam. And your response was, fuck that. Just give me a double of Tullamore Dew. How appreciative I was that that's what you did for me. Because yeah. I will take a double of Tullamore Dew over a quadruple of Jim Beam any day.
If you go to a bar and you ask, what's their finest whiskey? And the bartender says, well, we got Jim Beam.
You're probably at a dive bar.
Or your bartender... Well, we like this bar. We're not going to say anything bad about them. So keep going. Well, Jacob, what are your thoughts on so we're talking about not your beerler maker. We're talking about the JD followed by the OG.
The OG.
Jack Daniels is one of those all-American drinks that you can find in any bar.
America.
Any corner of the world,
pretty much. That's some freedom.
That's some freedom right there.
Liquid freedom.
The other great thing about Jack Daniels is so many dive bar cocktail recipes that you'll find on Happy Hour are predicated on the taste of Jack Daniels.
I'm actually really excited that we did what we did tonight because initially on the menu was Jack and Coke. And, you know, I didn't want to kick off our first episode with Jack and Coke. It's just,
no.
I like Jack. I worked for them. I got a shitload of Jack. I've had multiple different of their variety of brands. But something about a Jack and a beer back is just classic. It takes me back to the first bars that I used to hang out at when I started drinking.
Most of the bars I drank and worked at, Jack Daniels was top shelf whiskey.
Yeah, I mean, well, and I think that's a good segue into what we wanted to talk about, which is what constitutes a dive bar?
Oh, I want to go deeper than that.
Well, let's start on the surface then.
what was your first drink? I can tell you mine.
No, I actually have a really good survey.
I'm going to kick this one off this time.
All right.
My first drink, like drink, and I'm not talking about, you know, mama giving you some whiskey to make you go to sleep kind of drink. This is because I grew up in Alabama and that's what you did. My first
I grew up on the top of that column and that's what you did.
My first actual drink as a drink, like I knew I was drinking a thing to get drunk, was Old English 500.
Hell yeah.
It was a can of OE5 and it was terrible. I felt gross and disgusted, but I was also the same night as my first joint. So I can't really tell you which one kicked in first. I had a bad night. I did not throw up that night, but I hated myself in the morning. Xander?
Okay, so I'm just going to tell my first drink story because it's actually pretty fucking awesome. So I don't know if you guys are familiar with the show All in the Family.
Mm-hmm.
Those
who made the hit parade.
Yeah. So apparently when I was like 6 or 8 months old or something like that, my parents got invited to the third marriage of one of their good friends, whose bride happened to be good friends with Carol O'Connor, the actor who played Archie Bunker.
Oh, nice. He was not just Archie Bunker, but he played in the TV show. He was in the Heat of the Night.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Carol O'Connor.
Yeah. He's a fantastic show based on a fantastic movie that everybody should see. It's a slice of history.
Sidney Poitier.
Yeah.
So apparently I was crying during the ceremony. And when I was a young, very young baby, my parents would basically draw sticks as to who had to go and take care of me when I would cry at a wedding they were invited to.
You were just really touched by the emotion of the moment.
Yeah, I'm sure. And so my dad was the one who drew the short straw. So he had to leave and take me. And of course, his destination was to the open bar.
How old were you?
I was like 6 to 8 months old.
Okay, this doesn't count.
No, but it's a great story. Let me finish this.
All right.
So my dad took me to the bar, and sitting next to my dad was Carol O'Connor. And I was still crying. My dad ordered a beer, and he said to my dad, well, can I see your baby real quick? And my dad said, oh, yeah, sure. My dad is not a celebrity guy at all, but Carol O'Connor for Archie Bunker, like, fucking love that guy. So he handed me over to Carol O'Connor, and apparently he grabbed his like Corona that he was drinking and like shoved it down my throat and made me go and drink some of his Corona, and I instantly stopped crying. And his comment was, well, babies love beer. So I can say my first beer was given to me by Archie Bunker.
Okay, but what was the first time that you drank?
I was 16 years old. It was at Thanksgiving in my hometown of Santa Barbara. My cousin Bazooka Joe was out visiting us, and you know, he drank a lot, and he happened to go and bring some Wild Turkey. And up until the point that I was 16 years old, I had not a single drop to drink in my life. I drank like the remnants of his like watered down Wild Turkey, and I instantly felt a little funny. And that was probably the last time I drank until I was 20 years old. But that is true. I didn't actually go and drink again until I think I was 3 months before I turned 21.
So he just gave you some Wild Turkey and that was it?
I think I kind of took his glass. I think is what it was.
Okay, so the next question is, why was he called Bazooka Joe? I gotta know.
Okay, so this is my cousin, Joe Almeida. He is one of the most phenomenal DJs you will ever meet.
Haven't met him at your uncle's stuff?
No.
Okay.
He's East Coast.
Hey, now.
Okay, no. He was born West Coast. He lives in the smallest town in Pennsylvania you've never heard of called Dallas Town. But he is a crazy, like, 60s psychedelic freak out go-go garage, like, grunge fucking DJ. The best music you've never heard of that has inspired all the music that you love and never knew it was inspired by this. He collects on vinyl.
Original. Do you have copies. Any of his sets on recording?
I do.
I would love
you
to
must
hear
share.
It. You
I
must
will.
Share it. We should probably include some sometime.
That would be awesome. Yeah. So he goes by Bazooka Joe because he collected the Garbage Pail Kids. You guys know Garbage Pail Kids?
I remember the Garbage Pail Kids.
And one of the Garbage Pail Kids was Bazooka Joe. and he liked that a lot, and so he took that.
So are you familiar with Bazooka Joe gum?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, good.
Yeah, but there's also a Garbage Pail Kid called Bazooka Joe as well, and I think that's where he took it from, because that's more like him to take it from that than the gum. Yeah, so I took my cousin's watered down whiskey and I drank it at 16 at Thanksgiving.
Right on.
So for me, the first drink that I took freely, though I do not remember it, was at the age of 3.
Okay.
No.
Guys.
Bear with me, because this sets a trend. My father was working midnights at the time, got home from work, poured himself 3 fingers of schnapps, turned to put the bottle back on top of the refrigerator, and turned around to his child going, "Mo, mo, mo," because I had just hammered back 3 fingers of peppermint schnapps.
To be fair, that does taste like candy.
Okay, so you've brought up a term. Would you explain fingers for our listeners?
Fingers. Well, for many of our listeners out there, they have fingers. Generally speaking, the depth of one finger in your standard bar glass is roughly equivalent to 1.5 ounces for most men.
Now, depth as in what?
So if you lay
like your... up to the fucking knuckle?
No. If you take your finger and put it next to the glass lengthwise, so it's sitting on the ground next to the glass, and you pour up to where your finger is from the bottom of the glass, that's roughly 1 ounce to 1.5 ounces.
I gotcha. So if you stack very, 3
very
fingers,
rough, by the way.
Very, very rough.
It also depends on the glass size.
It very much depends on the size of the glass, because I have some rocks glasses at home where if I poured 3 fingers, that would probably be about 6 or 7 ounces of whiskey.
Which would be like a standard serving for me. But
yeah. So it's
I call it Xander sized.
It's basically the yay system of how drunk you are.
Exactly.
Okay, so keep going.
So anyways, that was the first drink that I took freely of my own free will. The first drink I remember having, I was hanging out with my grandfather. I was the age of 7, and he asked if I wanted a beer. I said yes. And that is how Jacob became a true believer in Line and Kugels.
You guys are fucking killing me. When was the first drink that you like sought out and drank?
That one. Because really? after that, my grandfather and I routinely watched football games and drank Line and Kugels.
From the age seven on.
I fucking hate you.
Why?
I just hate you.
I'm from the upper Midwest, dude. Alcoholism is a way of life. Now, as far as the first drink I paid for, I was 16 years old.
There we go. This is what I want to hear.
The first drink I paid for.
I walked into a bar that my grandfather had taken me into several times before.
I just want to say, I kind of love your grandfather.
And waved hi to the bartender and asked for a Line and Kugels.
Is your grandfather still with us?
Unfortunately, he's not.
Oh.
Raise a glass to the grandfather.
What's his name?
Bill.
Raise a glass to Grandpa Bill.
Grandpa Bill.
Woo! All right.
And for the next several years, that started out Jacob's trend of going to bars underage and never getting carded. That continued until he was 21. When I walked into that first bar where I had ordered my first drink, and while walking in, turned to the bouncer and handed him my driver's license, which is how Jacob got thrown out of a bar at 21.
Probably deserve that one.
You know, that bartender was not doing his job. And honestly, here's the thing. Like, I am not a fake. I'm weird. I don't approve. The older I get, the less cool I am, I think. I want people to be able to experience fun, but at the same time, I can appreciate what it's like to be a working class citizen in the American entertainment industry, and even in the lowest levels of that, with the bars. Like you are service. You're providing liquor.
Mm-hmm.
If you are serving liquor to alcohol, you're breaking the law, and you're doing shitty things.
Serving liquor to alcohol,
liquor to minors.
Yes. Old German with some Jack Daniels, guys. You see what? You know what? I'm 38. I can do this.
If you're under 21, you cannot.
And so, if you're under 21, you probably shouldn't be listening to this.
So, Nathaniel, let me just piggyback on that. For a lot of reasons, I 100% agree with you. I could make a lot of points about how it was a different time. There were other factors. But yes, you're right. What I did was wrong. And I, as someone who has worked in bars, I really hate it when people come in trying to fake their way into a drink that could cost me my license.
And that's the thing that I think a lot of people don't realize when they are having fake IDs and are lying their way into a bar, is that they just think, I just want to have a good time. I'm under 21. And what they don't realize is that in most states, you can cost someone their job forever in that industry. You can cost that venue their entire license to operate.
And you can seriously fuck shit up for not just yourself, but for the person that you are affronting,
yeah,
and for their entire establishment.
You could possibly ruin, depending on the size their of the life. Venue, up to like, yeah, 100, 200 people's livelihoods.
Yeah.
And again, just give some schmuck, you know, $20 to buy a six pack.
There are several states in this fine union of ours where serving a minor can be a misdemeanor offense. And if you get them intoxicated, it can be a gross misdemeanor. And should something happen to them after you've overserved them, it will be a felony.
We are coming to you from the great state of Oregon here in the Union of the United States. And in this state, no, you just don't do it.
That said,
if you are a professional involved in this, don't do it.
Just don't.
Just don't.
Just don't.
Not worth it.
That said, just a word from Just Jacob here. If we were to get past this puritanical fear of alcohol that we have for minors and normalize drinking, so many problems would be simple.
I'm all for that.
If I can just say really quickly, too, there is no federal law in this country that says the drinking age has to be 21.
Oh, I understand.
There is a federal law that says, however, if you lower it below 21, that the federal government takes away your highway spending money.
It's exactly. Not even a law.
It's more of a,
this is what we're going to do.
So interesting. Okay.
But Hold on. We're about to go deep into an area that we should
let's
save.
Let's just go back into dive bars really quick.
Back to dive bars.
So, hold on.
Let's go around table for this.
We're going to keep talking about our drinking experiences here. So I just want to say something. My drinking experiences were highly illegal. I did awful things with booze at an early age, beneath the drinking age, you know, and I don't regret any of it. But my favorite part about it is I didn't get anybody in trouble with it. I never impressed upon a bar to do anything. Everything was done in private. It was always us in our groups,
so
in our parties.
You never went to a bar?
And not until I was 21 or higher.
Okay. Yeah.
I didn't need to.
See,
I had roommates, I had friends that would just bring beer over to the house and be like, yeah, drink it, whatever. We don't
care.
And
that's the thing. That's the best way to do it. Because there's no risk. And I will say that I did go into bars, I think, 3 or 4 times before I was 21. The first time I was at my friend Carolina's wedding. And she was Puerto Rican Catholic.
Oh.
And so she had a lot of friends that were not Catholic. And because it was in a Catholic church, they were like, fuck this, we want to go drinking afterwards. To which I said, hey guys, I'm only 19, I can't do this. And they said, fuck this, I've been in the Catholic church for the last 3 hours. If anyone gets in my way, I'm going to fuck them up. We're going to go drinking. So we actually went to Cheers Northwest.
Nice.
And there was about 25, 30 of us. And so they just didn't card anybody. They just let us all in. And so I went there and they gave me a lot of red wine, which I do not like. I remember seeing it a
lot. You take that back, señor.
I will not.
This is democracy in action.
I remember singing a lot of Talking Heads karaoke because I was very drunk. Life in Wartime in particular is one of my go-to karaoke songs. But I remember being there for quite a long while and people just going and buying me red wine. And I don't know why they bought me that. I didn't like it, but it happened.
you made an interesting point, Nathaniel, about teenage drinking culture. And interestingly enough, that was why I ended up spending so much time illegally drinking in bars. Maybe this is a regionalism, but the part of the world I'm from...
which is where?
Upper Midwest. Teenage...
I see it. I hear it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, sure. You betcha.
Nope. Not even when you try.
Yeah, not even when I try.
You gotta stop trying, and that's when I hear it.
I know. Yeah. But in my part of the world, teenage drinking culture was truly fucked up, and some pretty horrible shit happened in when it was just teenagers drinking with teenagers. There was a lot of park parties, a lot of really shitty things happened. I wanted to have a nice, enjoyable drink, which is why I was going into a bar where I could enjoy a drink that was served to me by someone who wasn't an asshole trying to pick a fight with me and was not trying to do something untoward to someone I know.
With a bunch of old timers there who didn't were just happy to see someone young in the bar.
And who didn't look at me sideways when I asked for a soda and anise.
It's pretty cool that we have these interesting stories. Like, each of us has been introduced to the wonderful world of drinking at various ages.
Another time, just kind of give my last story about going into bars when I was underage, because it didn't happen very often at all for me, was I remember there was this woman, I don't even remember her name, but she had like I was invited to some weird house party at some point. You know, she was a DJ in town. She'd had a bad drug trip, and she was older than I was. And because I was so cool to her, she actually kind of latched on to me a little bit. And then I invited her over at some point, and she ended up showing me, I ended up showing her The Adventures of Pete and Pete, which she had not seen since she was very young, and like loved it so much that she ended up inviting me to the DJ nights in which she was doing things at. And I got into every single night that she would invite me there, because I would go arm in arm with her.
So how old were you at this time?
At this point, I think it was actually probably 20.
Okay.
But
I know that you were like big into DJing and stuff. Do you think that
not
was
at
part
that
of
time
that
though
contribution?
No, because I did DJ when I was in high school at a radio station. You know, I was not.
Gotcha. Yeah,
I was not in clubs. I was not like that. Was not my style of DJing. I was radio DJing. I was not club DJing. You know, but she just happened to like me because I wasn't an asshole to her, and invited me to all of these things that she would do, and then I would just get into them.
Gotcha.
And then I would like maybe order a drink and then hope I wouldn't get caught because I was petrified.
These stories have been brought to you tonight by Jack Daniel, Tennessee Whiskey, Old Number 7 brand, Sour Mash. Distilled and bottled by Jack Daniel Distillery, Lynchburg, Tennessee. And the backing of Old German Premium Lager Beer.
Tall Boys.
World knows no finer from the Pittsburgh Brewing Company.
I'd like to close this little section of drinking talk out with a little statement here. I know that most of the people in this country like to think of Portland as the land of PBR. But, you know, we have other things than PBR
here. We do.
We have many fine local breweries. We have many fine microbreweries. We have a lot of people who brew in their garages, and we might even bring some of their beers on here. But PBR is not the end-all be-all of tall boy beer here in Portland.
Nay,
we
sir, have nay.
A variety of things, including my favorite, Old German.
Maybe some people who are outside of Portland don't know this. I think most Portlanders do know this, that we have more breweries than any other city on Earth.
And more strip clubs.
I'm not talking per capita. I'm just saying period.
Period.
We have like 70 breweries in the city right now. That is insanely awesome. And the other fact too is that, okay, so Nathaniel's favorite is Old German. I like Old German. My favorite's Iron City.
I don't actually know that one. We'll talk about it some other time. We'll bring that up.
So I'm Team Iron City. He's Team Old German. And Jacob is...
I'm sorry, boys. From the Upper Midwest, Team Leinenkugels.
I've never even heard of that. Maybe at some point you'll bring that for us.
I've had their Sandies before.
You've had their Shandies. If I can get us a hookup for traditional Leinenkugels,
I suppose I'll have to drink it.
But until then, that's it for booze talk.
This is the last call for alcohol this evening. Drink up, drink up, drink up, and order again. This is the last call for alcohol, get going. Drink up, drink up, drink up, then order again.
This has been an interesting session.
If we were a drinking session, it would be an interesting session.
Yes. I am really glad to be here with the both of you for the inaugural episode of our first podcast. And I'm feeling pretty excited about this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that we had a gameplay today that we went totally off topic on, but I think it flowed really well and was really fun regardless of that. But it also makes me think that we have so many cool things to keep talking about.
We got a lot of things to talk about. Jacob?
I totally agree. I mean, I'm looking it down at my note list and we got subjects galore.
Yeah, I've been growing some ideas out here. We have a massive amount of ideas already built up before this episode. And I think that we have plenty more to bring to you. All right. You have stuck with us this far, and we want to thank you for listening this long. At this point, I think all three of us are a little sauced.
Definitely.
This is our first episode. We're a little excited about this. Obviously, we've been drinking. Xander, how you feeling?
I'm feeling really good. I have really enjoyed this time with all of you gentlemen, and I feel like we have a lot more to discuss in the future, and I hope that you will keep listening because this is just the beginning.
Jacob?
Feeling good, feeling great. Looking forward to talking to all you fine people in Podscape land in the future.
And me, I have been drinking some JD and Old German and talking with two of my best friends about three of my favorite subjects. We're going to close this out. But real quick, I want to let anybody who's listening to this first episode know how to follow us online. Jacob, how can you be reached online if people want to follow you?
You can't at this point, but in the future, you'll find me at Just Jacob on Twitter and on any link that Nathaniel decides to set up in conjunction with our website.
Xander?
I have a very not well-used Twitter account, which is DJ Gerrymander, and I also have an Instagram handle at Xander with an X, Gerrymander, if you want to follow me on there.
And you can find me at a number of places online, but just look for N. Philip Cole. I'll add more later. It's going to be fantastic. And I'm going to go ahead and close out this episode of Biker Dice and Bars. I've being your host and general content wrangler, Nathaniel, joining me today again has been Jacob and Xander. Say goodbye, fellas.
Rubber side down, shiny side up, folks.
We'll meet again some sunny day.
Rubber side down, folks. Have a good night.
Thanks for joining us, friend. We've reached the end of Bikers, Dice, and Bars. Talking bicycles and motorbikes.
Yep.